Julianne Kupka's head is pounding, and her eyelids feel impossibly heavy. She can't see anything, and she's wedged between an airplane seat and the muddy, wet ground. She had been on a plane heading home to her father for Christmas. Now, she's stranded in one of the most remote places on Earth. She calls out for her mother, but no one answers, because Julianne is alone, and no one can hear her. This is Mayday, a show about disasters. In this episode, we tell you about the Amazon plane crash of 1971, about how a young girl survived a plane crash and then had to face the Amazon rainforest alone. The hosts of this episode are Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. Mayday is made by the podcast company, Cast.
Julianne Kupka was born on October 10th, 1954, in Lima, Peru, the only child of parents Maria and Hans Wilhelm. She is tall and thin, and keeps her blonde hair cut short. She has been nearsighted since childhood, and when she's not wearing contact lenses, her large blue eyes are covered by a pair of glasses. The parents, who are both from Germany, met at university and quickly became inseparable. They both studied to become zoologists, a branch of biology that focuses on the animal kingdom. But finding work in post-war Germany was difficult. So the young couple moved to Peru and its capital, Lima, where Hans Wilhelm was offered a job at the local museum. In 1968, when Julianne was 14 years old, her parents decide to move the family from urban life in Lima to settle in the Peruvian part of the Amazon rainforest. At this time, the rainforest is still largely unexplored, and Julianne's parents want to study the natural world up close. Once there, they establish the Panguana Research Station, which, to the delight of Julianne's mother Maria, is named after her favorite bird. Life is different in the jungle. The family settles in huts built by the local people. The roof over their heads is no longer made of bricks and the walls are not concrete. Instead, their small home is built from wood and palm leaves. Without electricity or modern conveniences, the Kupka family cooks their food over an open fire and light up the evenings with tea lights.
Julianne often joins her parents on their research excursions. Her father teaches Julianne about the dangers and resources of the jungle, about the difference between poisonous and edible plants, and dangerous insects and animals. He also tells her that if she ever gets lost, always follow the water, because where there is water, there are almost always people. Julianne's education is done remotely, and sometimes it takes months for school books to arrive. Despite this, her grades actually improve after the move. But after a year and a half in the jungle, in March 1970, the Board of Education decides that Julianne, now 16 years old, must return to Lima and continue her studies there. Reluctantly, Julianne gets on a plane back to civilization. She finishes school a year later, when she's 17, and prepares to fly back to Panguana with her mother, who is also in Lima. But it will only be a temporary visit. Julianne has decided to take an entrance exam to go to university in her parents' home country of Germany. Her time living in the jungle is over.
Her mother, Maria, wants to take an early flight to Panguana to avoid the Christmas rush. But Julianne refuses. The earlier plane is due to leave on the same day as her graduation ceremony, December 23rd, 1971. She's not missing that. So her mother books a flight for December 24th. At such short notice, there is only one plane available, Lanza Flight 508. She knows that Julianne's father has advised them not to fly with Lanza because of their reputation. Several of their previous planes have crashed, but since there are no other available flights, Maria has no choice. The airport is full of people. Outside, the air is stuffy and humid, and although it's early morning, the sun seems to still be asleep behind the gray clouds. In the waiting hall, Julianne listens to the small raindrops hitting the windows. She looks down at her white knee-length dress and her open-heeled sandals. Maybe jeans would have been a better choice. The tapping sound of the rain gets louder. Almost all scheduled flights have been canceled due to the weather. Passengers are desperately trying to argue with the staff to get a seat on one of the planes that will still be taking off so that they can get home to their families in time for Christmas.
Julianne and her mother, Maria, are lucky. Their flight is one of the few planes that will be taking off. Lanza Flight 508 to Pucallpa, scheduled for a 7 a.m. departure. It's 104 feet long, with a blue line running along the white fuselage, and fits 92 people, 86 passengers, and 6 crew members. After many delays, they're finally allowed to board just after 11 a.m. Julianne is in seat F in row 19, the second-to-last row of the plane. Her mother sits next to her in the middle, and at the far end is a man they don't know. For the first 25 minutes, it's business as usual on board. The flight normally takes an hour, and Julianne and her mother, Maria, decide to have breakfast on the plane. Maria doesn't eat much. Despite her great interest in birds, she herself does not like flying. Julianne, however, has no problem with it. She feels safe high up in the sky, even when the journey is a little shaky.
Suddenly, large dark storm clouds appear in front of the plane. Normally, you'd avoid flying into such ominous weather. But today the pilots are in a hurry. They have a schedule to stick to. So Lanza 508 holds its course and heads straight into the storm. The clouds are getting closer and closer until all you can see outside the windows is darkness. Every now and then the grim view is lit up by lightning. Perhaps some of the passengers are reassured by the pilot's determined course ahead. What they don't know is that this particular plane is not built for the strong winds that are now battering the white fuselage. The lightning outside becomes more frequent. Julianne thinks that if the other passengers are nervous, they're hiding it well. The man in the outermost seat has fallen asleep. Her mother Maria, however, not being a big fan of flying, is clutching the armrests. Suddenly, the plane starts shaking. Julianne can hear a series of small clicking sounds, and the compartments above the seats open. Several thuds are heard as Christmas presents, suitcases, and candy fly out over the passengers. Glasses and coffee cups shatter as the luggage falls down and lands on the passenger seats. The lightning strikes the left wing with a loud roar, hitting one of the engines. The white glow of the lightning is followed by a warm yellow light from the fire that has been lit in the engine. The engine gives out, and nothing can now stop the plane from falling from 20,000 feet in the air. The noise is deafening.
The fire in the plane's engine grows bigger and bigger. The red flames eat their way up the white fuselage, turning the metal an ashy gray. Julianne hears a loud cracking and crashing sound, like a tree trunk being ripped apart. It's the left wing breaking off. Then she hears her mother say, "Now it's all over." The plane starts breaking into pieces. Julianne is strapped into her seat, but the other two seats in the row are empty. The sleeping man is gone, and so is her mother. Below Julianne, the green canopy of the Amazon jungle is getting closer by the second. All she can hear is the air rushing past her. Then, she loses consciousness.
At Pucallpa Airport in eastern Peru, relatives are waiting for a plane that will never arrive. But Julianne's father is not one of them. He is sitting at the research station in the jungle, far away from the news of the missing plane. And even when family friend Heinrich Mulhart tells him what's happened, Hans Wilhelm remains calm. After all, he has insisted that his wife and daughter not fly with Lanza. But on the afternoon of December 26th, the local radio station reports the plane crash and reads out the passenger list. Only then does Hans Wilhelm realize the horrible truth. His wife and daughter have fallen out of the sky.
It's 9 a.m., December 25th. When Julianne wakes up, everything is quiet. The ground beneath her is wet and muddy, and above her, palm leaves shield her from the sun. Julianne has just woken up in the middle of the Amazon rainforest. She has no idea how long she's been lying there, unconscious and alone. She calls out for her mother, for someone, anyone, but no one answers. Incredibly, despite just having fallen almost 20,000 feet, she seems to be okay. Her one eye is swollen shut, and she has a deep gash in her left leg. Her right collarbone is broken, and high up on one arm, she finds a small, deep wound. Walking with open wounds in the jungle should worry her, but Julianne only has one thought in her head. She has to find her mother. But every time Julianne tries to stand up, her legs give way, and she's dizzy. Her head feels like it's wrapped in cotton wool. She's injured, but 17-year-old Julianne is alive. That being said, she has no equipment and no food. All she has are the clothes on her back, clothes that are not made for the jungle. A short, thin summer dress and a lone white sandal with an open heel. To make matters worse, her glasses are nowhere to be found. It's December, which means it's rainy season, and therefore very humid in the Amazon. 80% of the year's total rain will fall in just 6 months, and although the temperature is usually around 80 degrees, it can drop to just 4. And to Julianne, wearing nothing but a thin, wet dress, it feels much colder than that.
The Amazon can be an alien and dangerous environment for the inexperienced. But this is not the first time Julianne has been out here on foot. She knows she doesn't have to worry about any large predators. Rather, the biggest threat comes from the jungle's many poisonous insects and plants. The Amazon is an easy place to get lost. To the untrained eye, everything looks the same. Therefore, when Julianne is finally able to stand on her feet, she doesn't venture very far from where she crashed. She moves outwards in circles, memorizing trees with distinctive features. That way, she can always find her way back.
When she's walked for a while, Julianne finds a bag of candy. The first trace of the crash. She picks it up and takes it with her. Any source of nutrition can prove invaluable. The whole day passes in silence, and Julianne feels terribly alone. Then she hears something, a low humming sound above her. It's a fleet of airplanes. Julianne realizes that they must be looking for survivors, looking for her. but the trees are far too dense for the people in the plains to see Julianne, and they fly straight past her. The sound gets fainter and fainter until it disappears completely. Julianne decides to follow it. It's her only chance of being saved. She carefully makes her way through the jungle, leading with the foot wearing the sandal to make sure the ground in front of her is safe to step on. It's exhausting and time-consuming work, made worse by her swollen eye and missing glasses. But her ears work fine, and eventually she hears something that could change everything. Water. She follows the sound, and just a few feet away, she finds a small stream, making her feel hopeful for the first time since she woke up in the mud. Her father's words echo in her head, "Follow the water." She stubbornly follows the creek, even when it bends and takes her on detours. So stubbornly, in fact, that she doesn't notice that the sun has gone down. She stops and realizes that it's too late to build a shelter for the night. So she finds some cover and falls asleep.
When she wakes up again, the humid air feels heavy in her lungs and leaves little beads of sweat on her skin. She gets up and continues to follow the stream, no matter what obstacle comes her way, because she can hear the rescue plane circling above her. Maybe they can see her better along the creek bed. But just like last time, Julianne is invisible to the rescuers in the sky. She continues to push through the vegetation until she finally gets to a clearing. And in the clearing, she sees something that makes her heart sink. Two men and a woman, still strapped to their airplane seats. The first people she has seen since the crash. And they are all dead. Julianne is shocked. She picks up a stick and starts examining the bodies, trying to find something to identify them. She just has to make sure that the woman in front of her is not her mom. So she gently removes one of the woman's shoes. A wave of relief washes over her. The woman's toenails are painted. Maria never painted her nails. Maybe her mother is still alive, somewhere in the jungle.
The riverbed that Julianne is following becomes increasingly difficult to navigate. Large tree trunks that have floated downriver block her way, and she has to venture into the dense vegetation of the jungle to get past them. When she gets back to the riverbank again, she sees the rescue planes disappearing over the horizon. One of the planes makes a final turn and passes right over Julianne, again not seeing her through the canopy. It's the last time she will see the planes. Julianne has no choice but to keep moving. The tree roots winding down to the river have grown larger as the riverbed has widened, and Julianne can't see if they're getting thinner ahead. Climbing over them would take far too long, and so it's time to switch strategies. She uses a stick to make sure there's nothing malicious lurking under the surface, before taking her first steps into the shallow river, a river that is home to both stingrays and alligators. When even the shallows become too difficult to wade through, Julianne decides to swim where the water is deeper. She's surrounded by insects, many of which try to crawl into her nose and ears. One of them succeeds. A fly crawls up Julianne's arm and lays eggs in her open wound. It's only a matter of time before they hatch. And when they do, the worms will be looking for something to eat. The wound was already painful, but now that it's infected, it's making Julianne weaker and weaker by the minute. And she's hungry. There's no more candy left, and she doesn't dare eat the berries in the bushes near the riverbed. Before long, she's not even swimming anymore, but just floating along with the current.
Ten days have now passed since Julianne fell from the sky. The eggs in her wound have hatched, and the worms that came out of them are slowly eating their way into her body. If she doesn't get them out soon, she risks losing the arm forever. So she breaks a ring she's been wearing in half and tries to use it as pliers, but she can't get a grip. The worms are simply too slippery to pin down. Exhausted, she lies down to rest on the riverbank. When she wakes up, she sees what she thinks is an abandoned boat on the shore. It's almost too good to be true. Only when she puts her hand on the warm metal does she accept that it is real. She's touching a motorboat, a first sign of civilization after almost a week and a half in the jungle. Julianne remembers how her father once treated a dog with an infected wound by pouring gasoline over it. She checks the boat's gas tank, but it's empty. She will have to find another way to get the maggots out of her arm. She can see a small path just above the shoreline and decides to follow it. It leads her to a simple little hut, similar to the ones the family had at the research station. She goes in and it's like she's hit the jackpot. In front of her on the floor is a boat engine, and next to it, a can of gasoline. After several minutes of struggling with the lid, Julianne pours the pungent liquid over her arm, which makes the worms dig deeper to get away from the chemicals. Julianne doesn't know which pain is worse, the burning of the gasoline or the worms squirming in her flesh. But the pain proves to be worth it. Before long, she's able to start pulling the worms out of the wound. By the time she is done, she has dug 30 of them out of her arm. But there's still no sign of other people. Julianne has to make the difficult decision whether to wait at the hut, which must belong to someone, or use the boat to continue on into the jungle. But she can't bring herself to steal, so she stays put. By this point, she hasn't eaten for several days, but doesn't even feel the hunger anymore, a clear sign her body is shutting down. The floor inside the hut is hard and uncomfortable, so despite having just found shelter, Julianne walks back down the path and lies down in the mud by the riverbed. It doesn't take long before she's fast asleep.
The next morning, the 11th day, Julianne wakes up to cold, hard raindrops and decides to wait out the rain back at the hut. She has decided to continue on into the jungle. But when the rain stops and it's time to head out, her body finally says, enough. She's exhausted and can feel her mind start to lose its grip on reality. Alone in the small hut, she prepares to die. It's late in the afternoon when Julianne suddenly hears voices. At first, she thinks she's hallucinating, but then she also hears footsteps. Three men come walking towards the hut. She gathers the last of her strength and goes to meet them. When the men see her, they recoil as if they were looking at a ghost. Julianne's eyes are bloodshot. She's malnourished and her body is covered in dirt. At first, the three men in front of her believe they're looking at a Yemanja, a water goddess. But Julianne manages to say, I am Julianne, from the plane crash. And they realize that they're not looking at a water goddess, but a survivor. After 11 long days in the jungle, she's been found. They give her food and water and help her pull even more worms out of her wounds.
It is too late in the day to start heading back, so Julianne and the men have to spend the night in the jungle. This time Julianne stays in the hut. Now that she finally has some company, it immediately feels much more comfortable. She thinks about the other passengers. about what happened to the sleeping man in row 19. And more than anything else, she wants to know where her mother is. Curiosity takes over, and she asks her new companions, "What happened to the others?" They look at the skinny girl on the floor of the hut. She looks so fragile in her tattered, dirty dress. But anyone who can survive the jungle for this long must be strong. And so one of them tells her the terrible truth. They have not found anyone else. Julianne is the only one. Not even the plane has been found. The words are like a blow straight to Julianne's chest. Her stomach feels like it's turning inside out. And she refuses to believe them. Her mother would have survived, having spent so much time in the jungle. Julianne's voice trembles when she explains to the men that her mother would have known what to do. The shock hits her so hard she can't even cry. The next day, the men take Julianne to the nearest town, Tornavista, where she's finally reunited with her father. When he asks her how she is, all she can say is, "I'm okay."
Of the 92 people on board, 14 survived the crash. Many of them were so badly injured that they died within a few hours, but some managed to survive for several days. One of them was Julianne's mother. Most of the survivors were unfamiliar with the jungle and ill-equipped to cope with such a hostile environment. Julianne's mother, Maria, on the other hand, was familiar with her surroundings, but so badly injured that she couldn't move. She spent days unable to seek help, waiting to die. There are many theories on how Julianne could land so softly. One suggestion is that the three seats Julianne was strapped into acted as a parachute, while others suggest that the trees where she landed must have been particularly dense and therefore acted as an airbag. Exactly how it was possible remains a mystery. Julianne was only 17 years old when she fell from the sky, but she has not let what happened stop her from living her life. After the crash, she studied zoology and now leads the Panguana Research Station, following in her parents' footsteps. Today, the research station is Peru's oldest, stretching across 1,000 hectares of jungle. When Julianne is not at the station, she spends her time in Munich with her husband. On January 1st, 2011, she published an autobiography about her days in the jungle, called When I Fell from the Sky. The research station at Panguana has been a protected area since 2011 and is still named after her mother's favorite bird. This has been Mayday, about the 1971 Amazon plane crash. The hosts of this episode were Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. The script was written by Joanna Lundblad. Sound engineer, Victor Pearson. Mayday is made by the podcast company, Cast.